Hello there. Good morning, everybody. Hi, Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. We're live in the Allstate studio, 7th floor of the Trib Tower, here till 5 o'clock. Steve Grzanich with the opening bell at 5, and my hero and yours, the great Steve Cochran, at 6. And it is Monday morning. Yes, Monday morning. And we are going to be hearing a joke from my dad. And that'll be coming up because it's a jokey time. And we're going to review the movies because it is Monday and it's the Monday morning movie reviews. Now, Colin and Eric are both on their summer vacation, if you will. Colin is actually doing a massive road trip. He's driving around all over the place, and he's in the middle of that road trip right now. So he will not be joining us. And Eric is on vacation as well and ended up in Vegas. So he will not be joining us. So our good friend Jim Leskowski is going to fill in, and we will discuss the new movies. Jim has filled in for, well, he's been a friend of the show for many years, and has reviewed movies for a very long time, and had filled in for Colin when Colin took some time off at the beginning of this year. So Jim is back, and he's good enough to fill in for us this week as well. Now, Colin will also be gone next week. He's on a very long road trip. But Eric will be back, but Jim will fill in for Colin. So Jim will be with us this morning and next week as well. And we got the new movies to review here, and let's talk to welcome Jim to the show. Hey, Jim.
Good day to you, kind sir. It's an honor to be filling in once again.
Well, I appreciate it.
I just hope that Colin's road trip is more like Something Wild rather than The Hitcher.
Yeah, well.
Of course, you don't want to run into Ray Liotta.
No, absolutely not. Most road trip movies end up bad, don't they, most of them?
Yeah.
That means Thelma and Louise, they end up dead at the end of Thelma and Louise. And so, you know, better to just stay.
Yeah,
I always say it's
all your money in Vegas.
Better to just stay at home. That's what I is. So anyway. Well, anyway, Eric will be back next week. Colin in 2 weeks. But, Jim, you're going to be with us this morning and next week. And I thank you for filling in. Tell everybody about NowPlayingNetwork.net. And there's actually the two-part Scorsese podcast that I did with you on Directors Club is available.
Absolutely. Yeah, it was a blast talking Scorsese with you once again, and the episode turned out great as expected, especially when you launch into the story about an infamous publicist that almost made me fall off the chair.
Oh, Frank Casey.
It's worth downloading for that alone, folks.
For those of you who've been in the business for a long time, and I've been reviewing movies, and it'll be 31 years. This year was 31 years. There was a guy, a legendary publicist from Warner Brothers named Frank Casey. The stories, the Frank Casey stories. So I do share one of those stories.
Yeah, that was great. So, I mean, the network continues to grow, and there's actually a couple of new shows. One is called Fresh Perspective, which focuses on a movie theme each month. And this month they're sort of covering the world of broadcast television, so obviously they're reviewing broadcast news and network this month. So that's a good double bill right there. And the other show that has come aboard is all about the horror genre, hosted by my good friend Patrick Rapole, and he is essentially doing feature-length movie commentary tracks for films of his own choosing. And it's shaping up to be one of my favorite listens every week. So that's called Tracks of the Damned. And that's a really fun show. And speaking of other favorites, supporting characters just had me on to talk about my history and my love of movies. And Vinyl Emergency, hosted by Jim Hankey, had a heck of a run recently, as well as Eric Childress's Movie Madness. So all those shows can be found at NowPlayingNetwork.net, so check them out.
Yeah, you should check them out. They're really great. I also appeared on Hankey's show on the Vinyl Emergency a few months back, and that's available as well. And all this
stuff is
available, and you can download it. It's NowPlayingNetwork.net, and Jim does a great job, and a lot of the people that host many of the different podcasts that are under the umbrella of Now Playing Network, great job. So everybody check that out. We'll have a link up on our Facebook page if you want to check it out. It's facebook.com/NickDShow, facebook.com/NickDShow. Okay.
Thanks,
man. So, you know, the Comic-Con is happening right now, the Comic-Con in San Diego.
Oh, yes.
And a lot of stuff has been, you know, leaked, and they've been, you know, like they got the Wonder Woman trailer that's out now and Justice League trailer that ties in with Comic-Con. But the big crazy sort of news is that Adam Wingard, they had a screening and that of this film called The Woods, which is actually a Blair Witch sequel.
I know. I got giddy. I was I was overjoyed to find that out because I'm a fan of Your Next and The Guest.
Yeah.
So I'm stoked to see what they did with this. I mean, I've heard pretty good things coming. I mean, I don't want to read too much. That's the
right thing.
Like, I don't want anything spoiled. I just know that it sort of takes place 5 years after the first film.
Here's what it's. I got a quick story here. Was the original Blair Witch Project was a triumph of marketing as much as anything else. I also personally think it was a triumph in filmmaking, too.
Yes, it was.
So considered a tribute to the guest director, Adam Wingard, pulled off a legitimately great piece of misdirection at the Comic-Con screening, and he revealed that his previously teased backwoods monster thriller, The Woods, was in fact a sequel to the 1999 horror phenomenon simply entitled Blair Witch. So it's actually called Blair Witch, not The Woods.
Right.
The trailer for the movie shows James Allen McCune as the supposed brother of the original movie's ill-fated Heather going off on his own found footage adventure with his crew of largely unlikable friends. Blair Witch definitely looks more overtly supernatural than the original, what with all the barely seen creatures running around in the woods. Hopefully it'll be much to avoid. It'll avoid the over-the-top excess that made Book of Shadows Blair Witch 2 such an inevitable disappointment. So that's what that's not. This, to me, is much more exciting than any of the Justice League things.
Same way.
Yeah. I hope it's good. And like you said, Adam Wingard is, I think he's a terrific director. I particularly like Your Next, which I think is a great film.
I agree. And it's crazy. It's like going to be, it's like in September, September 16th, it comes out already. So that's nice.
Yeah. Well, I mean, they really kept this thing under wraps. I mean, we were talking, as they said in this little article, that it was a great piece of misdirection. I mean, I had no idea that it was Blair Witch, and nobody did. And they purposely screened it and leaked it this week, and it worked. It totally worked.
We'll see how effective it is, because, nowadays I think audiences are very privy to the found footage, style of horror filmmaking.
Well, it's also become such an overpopulated genre, too. I mean, the found footage thing is just like, it's crazy. There's like one every 2 weeks. And it's not just horror movies that are doing it. I mean, there's found footage everything. And so I hope that people aren't tired of the genre and that this works out. And I really hope that people forget about that Book of Shadows, because that was just a terrible.
Yeah, that was pretty bad. Even though it had a great team of directors, it did not work at all.
No, it was really, really bad. And, I don't know, I mean, the Blair Witch Project, if people remember back in 1999, I mean, it was a phenomenon. It was really the first time that the internet had really, really been important in, the advertising and the plugging of a film. And it was really brilliantly done. I mean, in the early days of the internet and stuff. And for a long time, like when it first started getting publicized, people thought it was real. People thought the three people were real. They thought that this actually happened. And it actually carried into while it was released. There were still people who saw it when it was out who were convinced that it was still a real thing. So
I was one of them.
Yeah.
It freaked me out.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I personally think that Blair Witch Project is a terrifying movie. I think it's a very, very scary movie, and it still holds up today. And, I just hope that the concerns that we were just talking about, that the genre hasn't, tired itself out, and that people, will forget about Blair Witch 2 and hopefully go and see this one. So that, to me, is like the biggest news out of Comic-Con so far. Anyway, as that continues. All right, Jim, hang on. We got a break for the news, okay?
Okay.
All right, Jim Liskowski is here. We're going to take a break for the news. After the news, we'll come back, and we will start reviewing the movies. We got a bunch of movies to review this week. Our phone number is 312-981-7200 for talk and text, and you can check us out on Facebook.com/Nick D Show. All right, news is next. Hi, everybody. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. We are live in the Allstate Studio, 7th floor of the Trib Tower. I'm your overnight dude every weekday morning, 2 a.m. to 5 a.m. Steve Grisanich with the opening bell at 5 and Steve Cochran at 6. It is Monday. That means movie reviews. Colin and Eric are off this week. They're both vacationing in this hot summer weather. So Jim Laskowski, our good friend, is with us to review the new movies, which we will do right now. Welcome back, Jim.
Hello again.
Okay, so you did not see Absolutely Fabulous, the movie.
I did not, and that was only because I am not familiar with the show. I know it was a huge hit. Was it on Comedy Central back in the day?
Yeah, I mean, it bounced around a little bit. It was on PBS for a while, and then it did eventually land on Comedy Central. But it's been around for a really long time.
And, that's true.
And so I did see the movie because I happen to love the show. And it is so I will I'll take this one on. So it's Absolutely Fabulous, the movie, and it brings back our buddies Adina and Patsy, played by Jennifer Saunders, who created the show and also wrote the movie, and Joanna Lumley. And they are two, well, they are party-going. They enjoy cocktails. They get drunk a lot. And they love the glitterati. They love going to the high fashion areas, and they want to be in the popular world in Britain. And for years, they've been doing this show, Absolutely Fabulous, and it takes place in and around the world of fashion and paparazzi and entertainment. It was a show that existed for a specific group of people, I think, and I happen to be one of them. I thought the show was hilarious. I thought they were great. The chemistry between the two of them, the attitude of the show, really, really satirical and really, really funny. Well, they've come back, and Adina is, of course, a PR person, and she wants to land a new client, and they're working on getting Kate Moss, and played by Kate Moss, to be a part of her PR team, to be a part of so that she could represent her. And they end up basically causing Kate Moss, knocking her into the Thames River, and they kill her. They kill Kate Moss. So, and in order to get away from all of the publicity and hide out, they end up going to France. And it's about the adventures of them laying low, or quote unquote, or how much they can lay low in France with their experiences with the paparazzi, and then with friends and with relatives and daughters and things like that. And there are a ton of surprise sort of cameos in it, many of which have either appeared in the show or you would expect to appear in this movie. This is a movie that is specifically made for fans of the series. If you are not familiar with the series, you might get a few laughs out of it. But I don't think that you would love it. So, like, Jim, if you saw this movie, you're not familiar with the series, you would spend most of the time, like, maybe giggling here and there, but just not quite getting into the groove. This movie, it behooves you to know the series. There are a lot of inside jokes that fans of the series will get. There are running gags that started, you know, on the show that continue in the movie. And just the general knowledge of these two characters, because, you know, if you know who these two characters are and what they're about, then their incredible flaws and their relative unlikableness, if that's a word, would play better. Because I could really see somebody watching this movie who's never seen the show before going, why am I watching these two aggressively unlikable, self-destructive people do this stuff? And if you were a fan of the show and you became, you know, because it would be easier to have spent years watching the show, getting used to these two characters and getting to like them. Because even when you first watch the show, like if you're new to the show and you go back to the beginning, the first few episodes, you're going to be like, why? Wow, these women are like really these women are just a mess. And that's part of what's funny about it. But it is so I will say this, for fans of the show, of which I am one, a big one, I thought it was great. I thought it was really funny all the way through. It was really nice to see these two characters back. It's been a really long time since they've done anything AbFab related. And the writing is very sharp on the, you know, again, Jennifer Saunders is a terrific writer and she's a great performer. And this is right in her wheelhouse. And they have such great chemistry for lack of a better. I mean, it's kind of like, Jim, it's like if Lucy and Ethel drank a lot and smoked a lot, if Laverne and Shirley were hammered a lot and liked to hang out, you know, with stars. That's what this would be. It has that kind of chemistry. It's those two messy women doing very, very funny things that are both verbal and physical. I laughed my butt off during most of this movie, and as a fan of Absolutely Fabulous, I absolutely and completely recommend this movie. Again, if you're not familiar with Absolutely Fabulous, you might want to take a refresher course. You know, the show is available. I'm sure you can stream it online, or you can watch it on demand, or whatever. So I would get a little refresher course in there before you see the movie. If you're a fan of the movie, do not hesitate to see this. And I have to say that I saw it in a theater that was jam-packed with real fans. And, you know, to me it would seem like if you weren't a fan and you were in that theater when I saw it on Friday, then you were probably like, this is a party I've not been invited to. I don't know what's going on, and I don't – you know, it's like when you – I'm just trying to picture like somebody like maybe taking their boyfriend to see this movie, and that guy sitting there going, "What are you all laughing at? I don't understand why. Why is everybody in this room laughing their asses off?" And I'm not quite getting it. So, but I thought it was great. Absolutely Fabulous, the movie. Highly, highly recommended, especially for AbFab fans.
All right. Well, it's nice. They had two comedies in a row with Ghostbusters, and then this. To have some good have a good time at the movies with. That's great.
Yeah. And both of them, you know, the leads are women,
right?
Which is really cool. These are really messed up women, I want to say, Jim.
Yeah, when you said self-destructive people, I just immediately thought of It's Always Sunny in Philadelphia. It's like, why
not
do I want to spend time with jerks like this?
It's not quite on that level. I will say they're a lot more likable than the cast of Philadelphia, but it's in that kind of vein. But it's more cheeky because it's British, and you know.
Sure.
So anyway, I thought it was terrific. All right, Jim, tell me about Equals, which I'm very, very curious about.
Yeah, it's. That I was too, and it's the latest film from Drake Duramus or Ramus. His first film, Like Crazy, I liked quite a bit, which is why I decided to take a chance on this one. And that one co-starred the late Anton Yelchin. So this one stars Nicholas Holt as a character named Silas. He's an illustrator working in a futuristic world.
Right.
Where,
and what? By the way, what a day! What a lovely day.
Of course. Yes. Yeah, okay. You sneak that in there, I know. speaking of future world, where in this world, though, emotions are completely eliminated. There is no physical contact. Lives are very regulated. So there's essentially no need for anything beyond education and work, education and work, repeat. So people simply just exist, which... it isn't a problem when nobody can feel anything about it anyway, so they just sort of go through the motions. And one evening, Silas has a nightmare of falling from a building, and he wakes up, and it's a shock to him, and suddenly he feels emotions that he never felt before. And so he finds out from a doctor that he has SOS, which stands for Switched On Syndrome, and this is a diagnosis given to people who begin to experience emotions, and it's sort of considered a death sentence. There's no cure for it, and in this society where emotions are shunned, you're sort of inevitably climbing towards your own death. So the only thing he can do is try to live through these four stages until he'll be taken to a hospital where he'll be encouraged to commit suicide. But he begins to gravitate towards a coworker played by Kristen Stewart, and he develops feelings for her, and he also notices that she's a little different as well, and discovers that she's a hider, meaning she suffers from the same disorder, but she's managed to hide the symptoms away from the rest of society. So they start a relationship that goes against everything that everyone else believes in. And that it's essentially just a futuristic love story of sorts. Now, I think it would be a great hour-long episode of an anthology series or a short film, but as a feature length, it is a little overblown. It's kind of a one-note movie, and even though I think the note is played pretty well, mostly due to the performances, there's just little variants. I mean, you're also diving into a world where emotion is shunned, and you're going to sort of feel that way. There's a sense of indifference throughout this entire movie. So it's more of a contemplative movie that sees humanity and compassion as being a virus. And I think that's been done before in other science fiction movies, something like this movie called Code 46 with Samantha Morton and Tim Robbins sort of tackled similar territory. And then, you know, like it also reminds me of the work of Andrew Niccol to some degree. I like these actors and I like the characters. I found myself pretty disengaged as it went along. It's like the director watched, you know, like Blade Runner or Logan's Run and took out the interesting ideas from the movie and sort of just decided, let's just tell a love story, which is what this director kind of does in general, like with Like Crazy and then his follow-up, were just really sort of free-flowing kind of love stories. But I it's not unwatchable. I'd certainly say if you're curious, check it out, but it really brings nothing new to the table. So unless you're like a huge Kristen Stewart or Nicholas Holt fan, I'd say you could probably skip this one.
Okay. All right. It is available on demand.
Yes.
And so you can check it out there on the video on demand circuit, which I was looking through the listing over the weekend, and this was kind of the only one that really popped out for me of the new additions to video on demand for this weekend.
Right. Mm-hmm.
This was the only one. I mean, I looked at a lot of them. I was going down the menu and looked at a lot of them, and so I ended up ordering Keanu. Anyway.
As well you should.
Yeah, and so I didn't watch anything brand new, but I did digitally download, and I now have Keanu in my collection, so I can watch the funniest movie of the year 50 times a night. So anyway, all right, so that's Equal, and that is the first of two Kristen Stewart movies.
Yeah, I know.
That we will be talking about. But Equals is available. You can see it. I'm looking at it right now. You can see it on Amazon. It's all over the place. It's streaming everywhere. It's called Equals. So if you're interested in it, it's Nicholas Holt, Kristen Stewart, futuristic sort of sci-fi love story. All right. We'll take a break. And hang on there, Jim.
Okay, will do.
All right. When we come back, we will review more new movies. When we come back, we'll review this movie that we were just talking about with Kristen Stewart. It's Woody Allen's latest movie, Cafe Society. And we will review that right after we take a break here on WGN. Hey, welcome back, everybody. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. We are live in the Allstate Studio, 7th floor of the Trib Tower. And it is the movie reviews. Colin and Eric are both vacationing this week. So Jim Leskowski, our good friend, has decided that he would join us to help us out and review all the new films, which is what we're doing. You can check us out on Facebook, facebook.com/NickDShow. And you can also check us out on Twitter at NickDShow as well. 312-981-7200 is the phone number and the text number if you would like to join us. And let's welcome Jim back to the show. Welcome back, Jim.
Thanks again.
All right, sir. Well, why don't you tell us about Cafe Society?
Well, it's another year, so you know what that means. Woody Allen's got to come out with a new movie again. And this one is set in the 1930s. Bobby, played by Jesse Eisenberg, makes a big move from New York to Los Angeles with hopes of making it in Hollywood. And his best shot of getting in is through his rather pompous uncle, Phil, played by Steve Carell, who is an agent to some of the biggest movie stars in Hollywood. And Bobby sort of mingles with people in the industry and sort of latches on to his uncle's assistant, Vonnie, played by Kristen Stewart. And, you know, she grabs his attention and changes his life for better or worse. And then, you know, they develop an affair, but also it should be well noted that Vonnie is having an affair in her own right with the married Uncle Phil. So there's got to be a fraught love triangle that, causes tension and a rift. So as Bobby makes his way through celebrity-filled parties and Phil introducing him to many associates, we sort of get a deep sense of the name-dropping culture of Los Angeles, even back then, as well as sort of like the world that Bobby is about to sort of get corrupted by, more or less. But it's really, you know, Vonnie's down-to-earth attitude and sort of distaste for that sort of pompousness in Hollywood that really attracts Bobby to her, and it sort of moves the story forward, and once again, sort of just have an old-fashioned love story slash romp here from Woody Allen. So, you know, Cafe Society is less about, you know, the filmmaking industry and more about the social hierarchy of Hollywood. But this is a Woody Allen movie through and through, and there have been some latter period films I've enjoyed of his, like Match Point, Midnight in Paris, Blue Jasmine, but there have been some that I've really disliked, like To Roam with Love and Whatever Works. And for me, this one falls right in the middle. I know you'll attest to this, that Woody Allen can be a little derivative. Back in the day, like, I mean, he wanted to make his own take on a Bergman film, a Fellini film, a screwball comedy. But, you know, while it may irk some people, like I know it does for you, Nick, I tend to find it more endearing than not. This one will probably just go down as kind of one of his more forgettable efforts, but it's not without its charms, because I think at this point Jesse Eisenberg and Kristen Stewart should just get married, because I think their chemistry in every single film where they play an on-screen couple is great. Mm-hmm. And this is also not an exception. I just think that now that Kristen Stewart's kind of gotten Twilight out of her system, she continues to impress me more and more, and she's delightfully charming here. In a way, it's kind of like the joy of just watching actors that I love that sort of carry me through Woody Allen's mediocre script, like this one and the last film he made with Joaquin Phoenix and Emma Stone. It was at least like, well, at least I get to see those two on screen, and that's fun enough for me. But what's also kind of interesting is Allen's choice to move past 35 millimeter into the digital realm, and that his cinematographer managed to make it look really beautiful. I mean, the cinematography and production design is quite good here. So, again, I'm falling square in the middle on this one. There are things about it I like. I like the performances. I like that, you know, Blake Lively, Corey Stoll, there's, you know, he always knows how to put together a great ensemble. But as a screenplay, it really is nothing he hasn't done before, including like a commentary on celebrity culture or romanticizing earlier eras of cinema. So I'm not quite recommending this one enough, but I didn't think it was terrible either.
Yeah, I'm not a fan. I'm not a fan. But I do want to mention, you mentioned the cinematography. Vittorio Storaro shot this movie. This guy's a legendary cinematographer, one of the best ever in the business. And he has shot so many amazing films, including Apocalypse Now. He shot Reds. Just a ton of Last Tango in Paris.
Jeez.
This guy is one of the premier cinematographers of all time. And this is a gorgeous movie. It is an absolutely beautiful looking film. Everything else, the production design, the art direction, the costumes, the period stuff, all captured beautifully, looks gorgeous. Now,
Yes. This
is about the 50th time Woody Allen has made this movie. You know, it really is. I mean, he's made this movie 900 times already, and it covers similar ground that so many other Woody Allen movies have covered and covered better. And, you know, it's still to this day, people want to work with Woody Allen. They want to have that experience. An actor of any caliber always, for some reason, wants to work with Woody Allen. So he gets amazing casts, and this is no exception. There are some great people in this movie, you know, ranging from big roles to small roles. And again, they'll work with anybody wants to work with Woody Allen. And he is I think he's a very good director of actors. Like, he's able to get a lot of good performances out of his actors, particularly particularly women. I mean, if you look at the track record on like Oscars going to women in Woody Allen movies, it's pretty good. And it's pretty strong. I mean, if you just as recently as Blue Jasmine with Cate Blanchett. So the performances in this movie are all, you know, they're all good. It's just that to me, this is the same old stuff. It's the same old Woody Allen stuff over and over and over again. And the person that's sitting in for Woody Allen always tries to act a little bit like Woody Allen, which is what Jesse Eisenberg is doing here. I mean, even John Cusack acted like Woody Allen in Bullets Over Broadway. It's just you become the stand-in for Woody Allen, despite the fact that Woody Allen is like now almost 80, and he's still casting guys in their, you know, early 30s or 20s to play the character.
Nobody does it as bad as Kenneth Branagh did in Celebrity.
No. Branagh was just, that was ridiculous. But I agree with you 100% about Kristen Stewart. Kristen Stewart, you know, forget the Snow White and forget the Twilight movies. She is a damn good actress, and I stand by that statement. I think she's a terrific actress with a real allure and a mystery about her. I think she's become a better actress as she goes on, and she makes really interesting choices. She's in the Ang Lee movie coming out at the end of the year. She's made a lot of very interesting choices, including this. You know, she's good in this. And the chemistry between the two of them, I mean, if you've not seen Adventureland, which is a great film, and if you've not seen American Ultra, which is not a great film, but they're great together. The chemistry between the two of these people are great, and anytime I get to see Blake Lively in a nice dress, I'm happy. So there you go. So I'm not recommending it, but listen, man, me reviewing Woody Allen movies at this point is just not necessary. You know, it's gotten to the point where it's like, look, you're going to see it. If you're a Woody Allen fan, you're going to go. He makes a movie once a year, and the Woody Allen fans go. And that's what they'll do with this.
That's very true.
That's what they'll do with this one. And I, you know, that's cool. That's if that's your thing, that's cool. I'm not into it. All right, Jim, hold on, okay?
Okay.
All right, we got to take a break. We got the news coming up, and then after the news, we'll jump back into the new movies and review them. That's all coming up right here on a Monday morning on 720 WGN. Welcome back, everybody. How you doing? Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. We are live in the Allstate Studio, seventh floor of the Trib Tower. We're reviewing the new movies. Colin and Eric are not here this week. They're on a summer vacation, so they will return. Eric will return next Monday, and then they will both be back the following Monday. So filling in, kindly enough, is Jim Leskowski, who you can check out his podcasts and the podcasts under the umbrella of NowPlayingNetwork.net, NowPlayingNetwork.net. And Jim joins us to review more movies. Our talk and text is 312-981-7200. You can check us out on Facebook.com/Nick D Show. And welcome back, Jim.
Thank you.
All right, Jim, tell us about Lights Out.
All right.
So, this is not the Peter Wolf story.
I had a feeling that was coming.
Yeah.
Based on the 2013, if I recall, viral short film of the same name, this is the debut feature from director David F. Sandberg. And his talent was, you know, recognized by a veteran horror producer that most people know by now, the name James Wan. So when he saw that short film, he recruited him for this. And I remember a friend sending me this, like, short 3-minute film called Lights Out that scared the bejesus out of me. So when I heard they were making a feature-length take on this, I was a little skeptical. But this is the story of a rebellious young woman named Rebecca, played by Teresa Palmer, who, along with her precocious little brother, are terrorized by a woman of some kind who may be supernatural or metaphorical or some combination of the three. And this woman is simply named Diana, who can only manifest herself in the dark, almost as like a shadowy apparition of sorts. And Diana is potentially an imaginary friend. It's not all necessarily made clear, but it's the result of an interaction with their mentally unstable mother, played by the wonderful Maria Bello, whose refusal to take her medication has been making Diana's appearances more frequent and terrifying. So the big dilemma for Rebecca was, essentially, does she take her little brother away and leave like she did before to sort of, get away from the unhinged mom, or at least try to help the entire family overcome and conquer this entity? And then you'll find out how that plays out in the last act. So for much of its running time, I would say that Lights Out is more of a sort of a psychological drama than a full-blown horror movie throughout its entire running time. When it's a horror movie, it does consist of a lot of jump scares, in sort of induced by the sight of Diana appearing in the dark randomly. But much like recent horror films that are definitely better, don't get me wrong, but like, you know, The Babadook or Goodnight Mommy, at least there's an interesting subtext about how depression or loss can affect an entire family in this film. And I know it might be a bit cliche when all is said and done, that kind of metaphor, but I actually had a pretty good time with Lights Out. And I owe that a lot to the performances by Teresa Palmer and Maria Bello, who really elevate the material due to how committed they are to their characters. I mean, there isn't a ton of depth, sort of due to the fact this is barely 80 minutes long, or it is 80 minutes long. But I enjoyed watching their dynamic together. And like I said, it sort of reminded me of a family drama dealing with mental instability. The plot does take some silly, implausible turns, but the audience I saw this with kind of ate it up, and it added to the fun for me. The light-induced scares were well-constructed, so I think the director did a pretty good job for his debut feature overall. I found myself engaged by it. I mean, I definitely rolled my eyes a couple of times, but I'm giving this a pass. It's funny because I believe it was also Dan Geyer who called this his pick of the week. And I got to say, I think I agree with him. It's not nearly as good as something like The Witch, but it is light years ahead, better than The Boy or The Forest from earlier this year. So I'm giving this a thumbs up.
Yeah, man, I really liked it. This is like one of the genuine surprises of the year. You know,
for sure.
Saw the trailer for it, and I was like, oh, God. You know, because, I mean, it's like from producer James Wan. And, you know, I mean, that can go one way or the other, you know.
Right.
You know, when he puts his name on stuff, it doesn't necessarily mean it's good. And I'm not a real big fan of The Conjuring 2. I liked it, but I didn't like it as much as, like, everybody else on the planet did. In fact, I think this movie's better, quite frankly.
I think so, too.
But I really didn't know what to expect from this. It's first-time director. I did not know about this short film, Jim. I still have not seen it, so I wasn't aware.
Yeah, I'll send it to you.
Yeah,
it's
please
like
do.
It's really effective.
Considering how much I liked this movie, I would love to see the short that it's based on. I just think this guy's a really terrific director, and he kind of came out, and he did come out of nowhere. And I'm glad that James Wan found him and you know, threw some money at him and made him and got him to make this movie. And also the fact that he ended up with, you know, such a really good cast. I mean, these are some really good, you know, you mentioned the acting in this movie. Particularly, of course, Maria Bello is great in everything, but like this is a strong cast through and through, and they are committed 100% to the material, even if the material is a bit crazy. But what you're saying, Jim, I agree with 100%. The subtext of this film and some of the more effective horror films from the past couple of years is about grief and is about sadness and loneliness. And it really feeds into that. I mean, those are primal feelings and those are primal emotions. And a great way to use and explore the horror genre. And they do a really good job. There's a lot of jump scares in this movie. You know, I jumped out of my seat a few times. And it's really well constructed. It's very eerie. The character, the Diana character, is wonderful as far as I'm concerned. And there are some genuine scares in it. And the audience that I saw it with really enjoyed it. This is one of those movies I didn't expect much, and I got much more than I thought I was going to get. And I'm sometimes leery about PG-13 horror movies. Even though, you know, like The Conjuring 2 got an R rating, but there's nothing in The Conjuring 2 other than being scary,
right,
that deserved the R rating. So I guess if you're going to, you know, you're going to go for the PG-13, go for the PG-13. But PG-13 horror movies aren't what they used to be, say, 10 years ago, 8 years ago, when for me it was like The Kiss of Death. And it was just like, you know, like it was like a Japanese horror remake, and it was rated PG-13. And, I mean, the success of The Ring caused all that. You know, here's this.
Yeah, that's true.
The Ring made, like, a ton of money. So then everything that was Japanese and horror was remade by Americans and rated PG-13. And they would throw in somebody from the CW as the star. So you would have a very scary Asian child screaming. you would have a PG-13 rating, and you would have, like, somebody like Sarah Michelle Gellar in there. And that seemed to be a trend that I was just sick of by 2007, 2008. I was just done with that. So by the time when something like, say, Hostel came out, that's one of the reasons why I was, I think, more accepting of Hostel than a lot of people were. The second one sucked, but I still maintain the first one's great. It was nice just to see, you know, a flat-out R-rated horror movie after, you know, weeks and weeks of, you know, and also at that time, during that period of horror, you know, stuff like the Village was coming out. So M. Night Shyamalan is releasing these stupid PG-13 mystery horror movies. So it was a weird time for horror. But now, I think we're in a renaissance. Over the past three or four years, the horror genre has really, I think, made a comeback in massive steps, both in the world of PG-13 horror and in the world of R-rated horror. You know, there's been some really magnificent horror movies over the past 3-4 years, and I think that the genre is at its height right now. I mean, my favorite film of the year so far this year is a horror movie, and you know, it's The Witch. And
yeah, mine too.
And
yeah.
I really like this film a lot. It's scary and it's fun and it's good and it's actually about something, and it's a very, very strong directorial debut from this guy, David F. Sandberg. So yeah, I'm recommending Lights Out. I was surprised at how much I liked it and surprised at how creepy and effective it was. So I am recommending that. All right, Jim, hang on, okay?
Okay.
All right. When we come back, we will talk about Star Trek Beyond. All right, and that's the big one over the weekend. And then I'll do a little bit of the box office as well. I do have Eric is on vacation, but he did write his box office piece that you can read at movies.com, and I will discuss that. And maybe Jim and I will bat that around a little bit as well. And then we'll preview what's coming up next week. But stay tuned after the break. Star Trek Beyond will be reviewed by me and Jim. Good morning, everybody. Hi, Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN, live in the Allstate studio, 7th floor of the Trip Tower. And we are reviewing the new movies. The big one this week that was released, made almost $60 million over the weekend, $59.6 million to be exact, is the latest in the Star Trek reboot series, Star Trek Beyond. Jim is reviewing the movies with us. Jim, why don't you tell us about Star Trek Beyond?
It is directed by Justin Lin this time, as opposed to J.J. Abrams, who probably was taking a nice vacation. You know, he doesn't have a whole lot going on right now. But this is essentially an elaborate sort of single episode feel from like the original 1960s TV series, with the crew visiting a distant planet, getting into trouble, and eventually having to kick some alien butt. They're sort of bored with routine and concerned with their legacy. Kirk and Spock are kind of mulling over leaving the ship and considering new pursuits and endeavors for the future. But of course, somebody comes to them in duress and just, you know, says, "I need some help." So they decide to take upon a final quote unquote rescue mission in an uncharted nebula. And then, of course, they are ambushed by a swarm of vicious attackers led by the enigmatic Krall, played by an unrecognizable Idris Elba. And so the crew is forced to evacuate their ship and crash on a nearby unknown planet. And then most of them are taken captive by Krall's army. So you got Kirk and Spock and Bones and Scotty and Chekov. They're all left to rescue them with the help of a local scavenger as well. So this is, you know, not in terms of plot. It's not very complex. This is about as basic as a premise as you can imagine, where it's mostly a rescue mission and a chase picture followed by a climactic battle between good and evil. So don't expect, you know, an allegorical grand statement of any kind, and I kind of happen to like that when Star Trek gets a little heady. But this revision of the franchise, which started out, like I mentioned, by J.J. Abrams, has always been about a love of Star Trek more than anything else, and it's very self-aware in that regard. And I kind of like the first one in this series. I enjoyed it for what it was. You know, it's all about just good old-fashioned action and summer escapism. But for me, I gotta say, it's been diminishing returns, because I didn't really care for Into Darkness that much. I just found it, like, you know, essentially a rehash of Khan. But you know, in this one, I think it's at least a step up from Into Darkness. There are moments that remind me of the joy and thrill I got out of Star Trek: First Contact, which remains one of my favorites from the series. But, you know, I know you feel very differently, but I will say that I don't really think Justin Lin is the best action director, at least in this universe, and with the CGI and things like that and space travel. I think he kicks butt when it comes to car chase choreography, but I think, especially during the hand-to-hand combats, I think they're kind of messy, and I wish he would back away. The camera's a little too close for those types of fight scenes. But I will say the galactic confrontation at the end, set to the song that you know from the trailer, is an absolute blast, and the sense of humor is mostly pleasant. But, you know, I left the theater not thinking too much about this movie when it was over. So, once again, hate to sound like a broken record, but I'm kind of in the middle on Star Trek Beyond.
Yeah, I'm not. I'm way on the pro side.
I know.
I got to tell you, man, I thought this was great. And I did not like the first two. I didn't like the Star Trek from 2009. I didn't like Into Darkness. And I went into this one thinking, geez, this is going to be terrible. And I completely felt the opposite. I had a great time watching this movie. I thought it was really, really true to the spirit of Star Trek. And you're right, Jim. This doesn't get as heady as many of the good Star Trek films and the TV series used to. And that's kind of, you know, that's the only thing I miss about this movie is that it really doesn't get into the kind of, you know, thoughts and the kind of ideas that Roddenberry really embraced. You know, it doesn't really do that. This is just escapist fare, but it's great escapist fare, in my opinion. And I really thought the characters were fun. You know, the interacting between them is terrific. Carl Urban is hilarious as Bones.
Yes, he is.
And, you know, they've got great stuff together. And Chris Pine really, I think, plays Kirk the best he's done in the three films in this one. And again, the stuff between him and Spock, Zachary Quinto, really good stuff. Simon Pegg is terrific in this movie. And I do want to mention, Simon Pegg co-wrote this movie.
Right, I forgot to mention that.
And I want him to write the rest of them. Because I think all the great stuff, and especially all of the, you know, wink-wink stuff, clearly is Simon Pegg's doing, you know, like that's his thing is like, you know, his you know, how much he reveres these other genres and then makes an effective, you know, or writes an effective script that's within the genre, let alone and also just looking back at it in a fun way. And he clearly loves Star Trek and it's on the page. I thought Justin Lin did a great job directing it. I thought it moved well. I thought the action sequences were good. I think he handles an enormous amount of CGI special effects, especially the attack on the Enterprise.
That was good.
Really beautifully done. And boy, did they blow the hell out of the Enterprise in this movie. I mean, my God. you know, they've destroyed the Enterprise in other movies or damaged the Enterprise in other movies. But my God, do they mess it up in this movie. I like the fact that they're on this planet and they have to get back. And I was on board 100% throughout the entire movie. I think it's one of the more entertaining and fun popcorn special effects movies of the year. And clearly, I think the best of the three new Star Trek movies. But I have to mention Sophia Boutella, who plays a new character that they've added named Jayla. She is an alien who
helps them,
but also enjoys listening to Fight the Power. And is responsible for the music on the attack when they play Sabotage, and it's a wonderful, really crowd-pleasing scene. She kicks ass in this movie, and I think is a great addition. You know, clearly they're setting it up so that she's going to be in the next one. I mean, they at the end of the movie, they give her, you know, they make her part of the fleet. The Federation. She becomes a member of the Federation. And that's awesome because, you know, she is a tremendous character. I found this movie to be very, very entertaining all the way through. I had a blast. And I know it made less than Into Darkness made on its opening weekend. But I like this movie very, very much. And I hope Simon Pegg continues to write more of them. So I really liked it.
Yeah, no, most people are with you. I felt kind of restless. I mean, the pacing was a little off for me, but I don't know. I'll probably rewatch it again in the future and enjoy it a little bit more now that I know what to expect.
Yeah.
But I thought it was just okay.
Okay. And Jayla's a badass. That's all I'm saying.
I'm looking forward to seeing what they do with that character.
Yeah, absolutely. All right, Jim, hang on, okay? We're going to take a quick break here for the news, and when we come back, we'll mull around the box office here, talk a little bit about the box office right here on WGN. Whoa, yeah. Good morning, everybody. How you doing? Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. Live in the Allstate Studio, 7th floor of the Trib Tower, here until 5 a.m. as we are every weekday morning. I'm your overnight dude, 2 to 5 a.m. Steve Grzanich will be here with the opening bell at 5, and Steve Cochran at 6 for your morning drive. Also, it's Monday. That means my dad will call in and tell a joke, because it's jokey time. Okay, we reviewed the new movies. Colin and Eric are off this week, so our good friend Jim Laskowski was kind enough to sit in. And let's do a little recap. I reviewed Absolutely Fabulous, the movie, and I loved it. But you pretty much have to be a fan of the TV series. But I'm highly recommending that. Jim and I both reviewed Cafe Society. Jim, you liked it more than I did.
Mm-hmm.
And you are kind of in the middle on it, and I'm not. Wasn't a big fan of the latest. Equals, Jim, you thought was okay.
Yeah, it's worth seeing for the cast, but not a whole lot else.
Okay. And then Jim and I both enjoyed the horror movie Lights Out and are recommending that, surprisingly. And then we split on Star Trek Beyond. Jim thought it was okay, but he was a little restless during it. I, however, think it's the best of the reboot series by far. So there you go. All right, let's talk a little bit about this interesting, you know, Star Trek Beyond made $59.6 million. It opened less than the last one did, Into Darkness.
Mm-hmm.
But the interesting thing, and Eric covers it in his box office piece, here's what he says. Around 2 weeks ago, Paramount sent the message that they were hiding Star Trek Beyond from critics. The screenings being set up less than 24 hours before the first public showing, or in some cases, in no showings in markets at all, is as damning as a press release saying that they were not confident in the movie. Then a funny thing happened. Members of their junket press kind of liked it. Screenings were not moved up for anyone else, but the 24-hour before public embargo was, giving them the opportunity to brag about their early Rotten Tomatoes score and commercials. Even after most critics finally laid their eyes on Justin Lin's installment, the score still held up well, with 85%, making it one of the best-reviewed movies of the summer and the 11th best-reviewed of the year. But the box office that the studio should be concerned is, even after putting the confident spin, is the announcement of its fourth chapter. So, you know, it was kind of a disappointing opening, but I think Paramount mishandled this movie. You know, because when I first saw the trailer and it was like Justin Lin, director of Fast and Furious, and Sabotage is blasting, I'm like, what the hell is this?
I know. That was my reaction.
I was like, why is Sam, what are you doing? You know, and but then, like, within the context of the movie, it absolutely works. But,
yeah, it makes sense.
Yeah, but to have that, you know, you're really going to alienate a lot of the Star Trek fans if you do, like, an action, crazy, Fast and Furious-type trailer to a Beastie Boys song. It just doesn't make any sense. You don't want to tick off your base, you know, you don't want to tick off the Star Trek fans.
Yeah, and I consider myself, you know, I would say minor Star Trek fan. I like it. I don't love it. But I was into The Next Generation because my dad was, for the most part, and I watched it with him a lot. And I think, you know, I was kind of rolling my eyes at that trailer going, what the heck?
Yeah.
But, I mean, I will say it. That certainly exceeded my expectations.
When the second trailer came out, when they released the second trailer for Star Trek Beyond, it was much more suited to the universe of Star Trek. Like, I thought that I thought the first trailer, your first teaser trailer there, was a disaster. And I thought they made up for it with the second one, but they may have lost a lot of people with the first one. I think Paramount did a bad job advertising this movie. And, you know, I think they should have pushed the fact that Simon Pegg wrote it.
Mm-hmm.
They really should have pushed that. And they should have, you know, I don't know. I just don't think they should have included the Sabotage thing. I think it should have been a surprise when you see it in the movie. And I don't know. But it made $59.6 million, and it's got a lot to make up if it's going to, you know, if it's going to make a big profit. Number two at the box office was The Secret Life of Pets with $29.3 million. Have you seen that one, Jim?
Yeah, I'm pretty much right with you. I didn't dislike it, but I just, man, that's the final 5 minutes or so, like maybe the final 10 minutes or so. Oh, man.
Yeah. I mean, I think it's a fun movie. I really do. And I know a lot of people are down on it, but I liked it. And
It's fine.
Yeah. Number three, Ghostbusters, continuing to be a disappointment. $21.6 million, bringing its total to $86 million. And it's going to take a lot for it to make, you know, its money back. Ghostbusters, it says here, had around the kind of a drop that you would expect when you remove a portion of their audience to chase the latest science fiction action, you know, PG-13 movie. At $85 million, it's about $3 million off the pace of movies like Mad Max Fury Road and Bad Boys 2, but closer to the pace of Troy, which finished with $133 million. The Paul Feig reboot is over $100 million worldwide, but it still has a way to go before it breaks even, which is too bad because I really love Ghostbusters.
Yeah, I enjoyed it quite a bit as well, and I just, they set it up so beautifully for a sequel that I'm very much anticipating, and I hope it can make a profit.
Yeah, I hope so, too. I hope they make another one. I really do. Number four, very, very, very solid and impressive opening weekend for the horror film Lights Out. It brought in the crowds, and it made them happy, and it made $21.6 million for a low-budget film. That's pretty good. It'll be out for a few more weeks. I think it'll still do solid business. So that's a solid hit.
Good.
Number five, which we didn't review, Ice Age Collision Course. Neither of us went to go see the Ice Age movie. $21 million it made, which is the lowest of any of the Ice Age films. And as Eric points out in his box office piece, it's at this point where whenever you hear about a new Ice Age movie, you're like, why is this not direct-to-video?
I know, right? Is this like the ninth movie?
I think it's the fifth.
Oh, wow.
I don't even remember. Honest to God, I don't know how many of them there are. And I can't tell one from the other. It's one of those series of movies where I don't know what. I couldn't tell you which one was Ice Age, the Ice, or Age of Ice. I don't know. I have no idea anymore. But Collision Course only made $21 million. And with the kind of money that animated films have been making this year, and especially this summer, that's a massive disappointment.
Indeed.
Yeah.
I've heard pretty bad things about it. So.
Yeah, I have too. I have too. It did not entice me to, you know, to go. So number six,
right.
Speaking of animated movies, but successful animated movies, Finding Dory is up to $460 million.
Holy cow.
In America alone. It is, I believe, if I'm looking at this, Finding Dory, which will be the seventh highest grossing film ever released in the U.S., seventh. So that is a massive hit for Pixar. Number seven is The Legend of Tarzan, $6.4 million. I can't believe that this, I mean, you know, it's still way below its budget, and it's not going to, you know, it's not going to make a profit. But I'm still stunned that it made over $115 million.
Yeah, I am too. I actually didn't get to see that one, and I didn't hear good things about it either, so that's kind of why I passed it up. But
yeah. Yeah, I don't know. I mean, it just seems weird to me that in 2016 you're releasing a Tarzan movie. I don't know why that just seems it just seems strange
yeah.
to me. And he's in khakis. Number eight, Mike and Dave Need Wedding Dates. $4.4 million, bringing its total up to $40 million, which is not great, but not as bad as it could have been, I think.
Right.
Number eight is Hillary's America, which made $3.7 million over the weekend, clearly because of the only reason that it made any amount of money is because people were curious about it. Because
God, the reviews for that, man.
Awful. Awful. Yeah.
Yeah.
The guy who made this movie also directed a movie called America and Obama's America back in 2012. And so, you know, he makes these movies, they have a certain political message, and he releases them at a time, you know, when he wants to make the most money and get people talking. You know, oddly enough, he released one in 2012 when Obama was running for re-election, and so now, of course, this comes out. And the reviews are unbelievable. It is 4% on Rotten Tomatoes, which is really low. And then number 10 is The Infiltrator, which $3.2 million, bringing its total up to $12.2 million. Not making a lot of money. I don't know. Did you see it?
Yeah. You know, being a big Bryan Cranston fan, I felt compelled to check it out. And it's worth seeing for the performances. I mean, I'd say it sounded like a broken record, but I was kind of in the middle on it. But I enjoyed the performances.
Yeah, no, I recommended it. I liked it. It doesn't break any new ground at all. It's not like we've never seen this kind of stuff before. But when you have a great cast like this, led by somebody like Bryan Cranston, it's certainly watchable, and I think very good. So
yeah.
I recommended The Infiltrator. So there it is. Star Trek Beyond was indeed the number one movie at the box office this weekend with $59.6 million, but it underperformed against the other Star Trek films in the rebooted series. All right, cool. You will be with us next week, Jim.
Yeah, looking forward to it. We got a couple of good ones.
Well, I would hope.
Hopefully.
Now, Don't Think Twice is the one that I'm most looking forward to.
Yeah.
This is the movie about the world of improvisational comedy and about how this improv group, some people get chosen to go to, well, it's not Saturday Night Live in the movie, but for all intents and purposes, it is. And it's about what happens to this group when one or two of them are going to be chosen to make it to big leagues. Mike Birbiglia directed it, and he's directed a couple of really great movies. And I can't wait to see. That's the one that I'm really looking forward to the most.
Yeah, I think that opens with the music box. Mm-hmm. And then you got Jason Bourne, man.
Jason Bourne looks great. It looks kick-ass. It's Matt Damon is back in the role. Paul Greengrass directing it. It looks phenomenal. I'm kind of excited about Nerve. It looks weird and kind of cool, and it's got Emma Roberts in it, and I like her. So that's like
it looks ridiculous. It
does.
It might be fun.
That's what I'm saying. It looks ridiculous, but I hope they have fun with it. And then the one movie that I just think is going to be horrendous is Bad Moms from the writers.
Gotta have one of those.
Gotta have one of those.
Bad teacher, bad Santa, bad moms.
Yep, absolutely. All right, so that's what we got to look forward to. Eric will be joining us next week. Colin has another week off. Jim, as always, I really appreciate you stepping in for us. You do a great job, buddy.
Oh, thanks. I really appreciate it. Anytime.
Okay, Jim. Thanks, man. We'll talk to you next week. That's Jim Leskowski. Check out his podcast network, nowplayingnetwork.net.